Headlines: Iran says it seeks to promote cooperation with neighboring as well as Persian Gulf countries to establish lasting security in the region. Canadian police say a shooting in the suburbs of Toronto has left five people dead amid mounting gun violence in Canada in recent years. And several French cities witnessed clashes between police and football fans following France's defeat in the dramatic World Cup final against Argentina. Welcome to World News from the reigning capital, Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Our top story: Iran says it seeks to promote cooperation with its neighbors and Persian Gulf countries to establish lasting security in the region. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says Tehran is ready to host foreign and defense ministers of regional countries to discuss security issues. He says Iran has repeatedly announced its readiness to build trust and cooperate with its neighbors. The top diplomat also says regional countries should abandon reliance on foreign powers for their security once and for all. Amir Abdollahian made the remarks in an address to the third edition of the Tehran Dialogue Forum. This year's initiative is focused on Iran's policy toward its neighbors. It has been attended by 70 officials and representatives from 36 countries. Tehran has dismissed as unfounded claims by the head of the U.S. spy agency regarding Iran-Russia cooperation over the Ukraine war. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said baseless accusations leveled against Iran by the CIA over the Ukraine conflict are part of Washington's propaganda campaign against Iran. He said as part of their groundless political claims and illegal moves, U.S. authorities question conventional Iran-Russian defense and military cooperation. The spokesman noted this PR exercise by the White House is based on lies and deception and comes with different aims, namely exerting political pressure on Iran, provoking Iranophobia, and covering up Washington's warmongering. Kanani reiterated Tehran-Moscow cooperation on different fronts, including in the defense domain, is in line with the two nations' common interests. He said the two sides are expanding their cooperation in compliance with their rights and international commitments. Afghans are calling for an independent and transparent investigation into dozens of summary killings by the UK Special Air Service troops in Afghanistan after years of reports that elite British forces killed civilians in cold blood. Press TV's Rahmatullah Bakhban reports from Kabul.
Afghan people have been calling for transparent and impartial investigations into crimes and wrongdoings by NATO forces on their soil. Among them, relatives of victims of the NATO war in southern Helmand province are demanding justice for the killing of 54 unarmed people by British Special Air Service troops there. The dead include children. Afghans want the murderers should be held accountable.
Helmand province witnessed deadly night raids and airstrikes by NATO forces, especially those of the UK. Besides, civilian captives were tortured and shot dead. In one case, children were thrown off military planes. I remember so many atrocities by the foreign forces in which civilians were harmed. We call for those British and American perpetrators to be tried in an impartial and transparent court. They should be brought to account and victims should receive compensation.
The U.S. invasion of our country was a mistake. The United States and its allies are to blame for the devastation and mass killings of our people in different provinces in the past 20 years. Only in Helmand, where I used to live, 9,000 innocent people lost their lives during the U.S. invasion. Why? Weren't they human beings? Didn't they have the right to live in their country? Today we call on them to pay the price for their mistake and help those whose livelihoods were devastated.
However, the UK government has announced the start of an inquiry into wrongdoings by its forces in Afghanistan, but some experts say only transparent probes by independent bodies can help make headway with the case. They believe investigations by foreign governments could cover up the facts about the gross violations at the hands of their forces in Afghanistan.
NATO troops, in fact, committed thousands of war crimes in Afghanistan. In order to hide their scandals and whitewash their disgraceful history, they claim to have voluntarily launched an inquiry. Such fake probes can also be used to distort public opinion and manipulate media and international rights bodies. In addition, they are likely to probe selected cases rather than real shocking incidents. I mean, they would single out a certain case of misconduct from among hundreds of terrifying rights violations so that their forces do not face heavy charges.
During the two-decade U.S. invasion, Afghanistan witnessed much disgrace by NATO troops. More and more facts are emerging regarding unlawful killings and gross violations by foreign forces on Afghan soil. The U.S. war on Afghanistan has left many Afghans in great suffering. People here are calling for accountability and justice for years of gross violation by the NATO troops. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Canadian police say five people have been shot dead and another has been wounded in the suburbs of Toronto. Police say the suspect is also shot dead after an exchange of fire with officers in an apartment building. The motive of the shooter is still unknown. Police have evacuated the area where the shooting took place. They are investigating the incident. Canada has witnessed mounting gun violence in recent years in one of the deadliest such incidents. An assailant posing as a police officer killed 22 people in the eastern province of Nova Scotia in April 2020. Streets of France after the country's football team lost the FIFA World Cup title. Clashes broke out in the capital, Paris, as well as in Lyon, among other cities. In Paris, scuffles erupted as police charged into the crowd to disperse bystanders. Also in Lyon, police used water cannons and tear gas to push back a mob which fought back, hurling projectiles that the officials say 15 people were arrested. France were beaten by Argentina on penalties in the final match of the FIFA World Cup on Sunday. Ukraine says Russia has carried out another drone attack against key infrastructure in the capital, Kiev. Local officials claim over 20 drones were deployed in the strike. They say most of the aircraft were brought down. Kiev's mayor says the attack damaged the critical infrastructure, but there are no known casualties. This comes as Russian President Vladimir Putin is about to travel to Belarus. Russian forces are now stationed there as part of a joint regional force and are due to hold military exercises. Kiev is now warning that Belarusian forces could join the Russian war in Ukraine. Belarus denies any such plan. Russia is also planning to hold joint naval drills with China in the coming days. Russia's defense ministry says the maneuvers are aimed at strengthening mutual naval cooperation. Russia says it has shot down four U.S.-made missiles fired by Ukraine over the southern Belgrade region. We'll bring you more details on that as we get it. It's time now for our news review segment, where we take a look at one of our stories in more detail. The United Kingdom has confirmed delivery of another military aid package to Ukraine nearly 10 months into the Moscow-Kiev war. The British Ministry of Defense says the new package includes two precision-guided Brimstone missiles. The anti-tank weapons are capable of salvo attacks and autonomously finding targets once it reaches a designated target area. The ministry says the aid could play a crucial role in stalling Russian advances into Ukrainian territory. The new UK military aid comes as the West has already provided Kiev with billions of dollars worth of military aid to boost Ukraine's defense capabilities. Russia has warned time and again that continued supply of Western weapons and equipment to Kiev will only prolong the war. So joining us is Robert Carter, our correspondent in the British capital, London. And we also have Fra Hughes, a journalist, author and activist from Belfast. That's the capital of Northern Ireland. Gentlemen, welcome. So, Robert, if I start with you, we saw these brimstone missiles being used in action in Iraq and Syria. We're not with questions about their reliability, but the wider pumping and shipping of weapons into the war zone, how is it going to bring an end to an energy winter crisis that is being felt across the European continent, not only in the UK?
It's an interesting point, and one that isn't really being addressed here in the UK, at least not for the time being. This particular debate around the British economy and the hardships that UK citizens are going through is mostly an issue which has been internalized here, and there isn't much commentary regarding how some of this may be as a result of what's going on in Ukraine, and certainly is. But the British government has actually issued strange comments on occasion, basically criticizing trade union bosses here in the UK and their strike action as being something which would please Moscow and Putin, as it ultimately applies further pressure on the British government during this ongoing conflict. So that is the only way in which it's been covered so far from inside the UK. And it is very interesting because ultimately Britain has found the money and the resources available to keep fueling conflict in Ukraine, but yet is telling British taxpayers that they're going to have to tighten their belts. They're basically on their own during the colder months of this Christmas, and they're just going to have to fend for themselves and put up with an increase in daily costs, an increase in fuel costs, and also, of course, a lack of increase in wages in many sectors as well. So ultimately, this is a point which may get mentioned further down the line when a protest here in the UK continues to intensify, and possibly in the lead up to the next election, this point could be raised about Britain's foreign policy, British foreign spending, and the lack of willingness to spend here internally in order to prop up struggling British citizens.
Right. London says these weapons will play a crucial role in stalling Russian advances on Ukrainian territories. I thought the West said Ukraine was on the offensive and that it was advancing and that Russian troops were retreating. What happened there?
Well, it's all part of the propaganda war where Western mainstream media is telling us that Ukraine is winning the war. This is for the internal kind of population of the United Kingdom, Western Europe, United States, Canada, and Australia. It is a narrative whereby if people are suffering because of the energy crisis and rising inflation, fuel costs and food costs, that somehow, you know, like the war will be by Christmas seems to be some of the mentality that's involved in this. But if we actually look at what else the British government is involved in when it comes to the Ukraine, on one level, they're supplying these arms in an effort, a long-term goal and a long-term effort to destabilize, cripple, and reduce Russia and the Russian Federation to a balkanized series of federal states where Western corporations can then go in and cherry-pick the natural resources and assets that belong to the people of Russia and the Russian Federation. But, I mean, Britain and specifically MI6 stand accused of being involved in the bombing of the Crimea Bridge. Now, that's one step further than sending munitions and weapons to Ukraine, supposedly for self-defense. Liz Truss, the shortest reigning Prime Minister in British history, purportedly sent a text to Anthony Blinken shortly after the Nord Stream 2 pipeline sabotage attack saying job done. So Britain is not only sending arms and sending equipment to Ukraine, it is playing an active part in the war to try and destroy the Russian Federation. And we have in Belfast, we have a company, Thales, or Thales, and they are the eighth largest military company in the world, logistically for making missiles. So these missiles are made in Belfast. Recently, about 6 months ago, Rishi Sunak visited the company, visited their headquarters, stood with a Javelin missile on his shoulder, modelling it, and then about a week later, We had an Anatov plane come from Ukraine to pick up military equipment to take to Kiev. So Britain is up to their arms, literally, in the arms trade.
North Korea says it has conducted what it calls an important final phase test for the development of a spy satellite it seeks to complete by April next year. Pyongyang says it launched the satellite on Sunday from a station in the northwestern part of the country. It says the test was aimed at reviewing the country's capability of satellite imaging, data transmission and ground control systems. This comes a day after the South Korean and Japanese militaries reported the North fired two ballistic missiles into the Sea of Japan. Pyongyang has carried out a slew of missile tests this year. It says these are in response to the United States' growing presence in the region and its joint military drills with South Korea and Japan. That brings an end to the International Bulletin.
Full Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Role of Erdogan power's policies in recent bitter events in Iran is obvious. This is the part of speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on October 3, 2022, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's armed forces. This ceremony was held in Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam University of Officer and Police Training. If you look at Europe, especially France, massive riots occur every now and then on the streets of Paris. I want to ask you, has the US President or the US House of Representatives ever supported European rioters? Have they ever issued a statement saying we stand with you? Is there any record of the mass media, which is affiliated with American capitalism, the US government, and their mercenaries, like some of the governments in the region, unfortunately, such as the Saudi government, is there any record of them supporting the rioters? Is there any record of them announcing that they will provide this hardware or that software for the internet and put it at the disposal of rioters so that they can easily communicate with each other and carry out their plans? Is there a history of such a thing happening anywhere in the world, in any country? But it happened here, and not just once or twice. It has happened many times, over and over again. Well, how can you not see foreign hands at play? How can an attentive person not sense that there are other hands behind the scenes of these events? Other policies are at play.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Of course, they falsely pretend that they care that someone has passed away in the world. They are lying. They are not upset by this at all. In fact, they are happy. They're happy because they have a pretext for creating unrest. They lie. Here, the heads of the three powers of the state, executive, legislative, judicial, expressed their sorrow and sympathized with the grieving family. Then certain elements murder other people who are innocent and have not committed any crime. The judiciary promised to follow up on this to the end. This is what investigations are all about. It means following up on a case, saying the results, and saying if anyone was guilty of something or not. And if someone was guilty, identify them.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Japan is allocating $320 billion in an effort to build up its military, a move that would be unthinkable under previous administrations. But now, under the Liberal Democratic Party led by Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, surveys say the budget has the favor of over 70% of voters. The military developments include extending the range of Japan's missiles, stockpiling of spare parts and other munitions, reinforcing logistics, developing cyber warfare capabilities, and cooperating more with US and other like-minded countries. The extension of the range of Japanese missiles is only meant to be able to reach China, if the need were to ever arise, as there is no other reason to extend the range to around 1,000 kilometers. The reason why Japan feels the need to advance its missile technology is the escalation of tensions in the Indo-Pacific region. North Korea has, on multiple occasions, tested intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of carrying nuclear warheads, one of which landed a little too close for comfort to Japan. The China-Taiwan tensions are also cause for concern for Japan, as a potential military escalation could put Japan in danger as well. This is because of the large number of troops and massive amounts of supplies that the US has stationed in Japan, which they would most likely take advantage of in case of an escalation with Taiwan. Here's what Prime Minister Kishida said with regards to the military build-up plan.
We can feel a rapid increase in the severity of the security environment around our country. In countries and the regions surrounding our country, a strengthening of nuclear and missile capabilities, a rapid military build-up, and attempts to unilaterally change the status quo through power are becoming more pronounced.
Kishida also emphasized on the issue of China as a challenge to its security. He said, "China's current external stance and military trends are a challenge to our country's peace and security, the securing of global peace and stability, and the enhancement of international order based on the rule of law." To which Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin responded by saying, "Japan disregards the facts, deviates from the common understandings between China and Japan, and its commitment to bilateral relations, and discredits China." Japan even believes that Russia is a threat to its security, albeit indirectly. Tokyo sees Russia's war in Ukraine as a dangerous precedent that might encourage China to carry out a similar operation in Taiwan and cause unimaginable disruption to world trade. By taking stances against North Korea, China, and Russia, Japan must look to the US and South Korea as its allies. $320 billion. Once the budget is injected into Japan's military, it will bump up Japan's ranking among the top military spenders in the world from 8th place all the way up to 3rd place, just below the US and China, even higher than Russia during a time of war. And this amount of expenditure is going to hurt Japanese economy. Kishida's plans will double Japan's defense outlays to about 2% of the country's gross domestic product over the next 5 years. It would also mean that Japan's defense ministry will now have 10% of the country's entire annual public spending. In the document that outlines the plan for the military expenditures, what is not included is how the money will come about. It's unclear whether the government will have to raise money through tax increases or whether it will borrow the money. But if we look at the reason behind this unprecedented amount of spending on military by Japan, that is known for its pacifist constitution, we will realize that if not for the US's recent provocative actions, Japan would not deem its security threatened. North Korea's ICBM missile tests only came about as a result of US provocations, and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has mentioned this on multiple occasions. With regards to the issue of Taiwan, if not for the meddling of the US in Taiwan's affairs and the breaking of the One China policy that the US had previously agreed to, China would not have conducted the biggest military exercise in its history. If not for the constant eastward expansion of NATO, spearheaded by the US, the war in Ukraine would also not have happened, and Japan's concerns over Russia encouraging China to also attack Taiwan would never come to be. It's almost as if Japan's alliance with the US is costing them more money than it's bringing in. And that is completely disregarding the security risks that this alliance has brought upon the land of the rising sun.
Iran has wrapped the European Union over anti-Tehran measures taken by the Council of the European Union. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian denounced, quote, "certain political shows that have been put on display by the Council under the pretext of defending the issue of human rights." The European Council has imposed a slew of fresh sanctions against Iranian natural and legal entities. According to a statement issued by the EU foreign ministers, 20 individuals, along with one entity, the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, have been sanctioned over alleged human rights abuses. The bloc has also slapped sanctions on four more people and has many entities blacklisted over Tehran's alleged drone supplies to Russia. The bloc's new sanctions include asset freezes and travel bans to the EU. The ministers condemned what they called the widespread use of force by the Iranian authorities against protesters. The European Union last month imposed sanctions on a number of Iranian institutions and individuals, including the 24-hour English-language press TV news channel, over alleged rights violations following the recent foreign-backed riots in the country.
In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the rioters.
Foreign-backed riots have hit various Iranian provinces since 22-year-old woman Mahsa Amini died at the hospital on September 16th, 3 days after she collapsed at a police station. An investigation has attributed Amini's death to a medical condition rather than alleged beatings by the police. The violent riots have claimed the lives of dozens of people and security forces while also allowing terrorist attacks across the country. In the last 2 months, the terrorists have set fire to public property and tortured several Basiji members and security forces to death. Western states have been hyper-aggressively pushing the regime change agenda in form of hybrid war, making a sheer mockery of international law. Authorities in the US and the EU have openly and brazenly instigated rioters in Iran through official and unofficial channels. Iran's intelligence ministry has said the United States and the United Kingdom were directly involved in the unrest, adding that dozens of terrorists affiliated with the Israeli regime and anti-revolution groups have also been detained in the unrest.
Online, the MEK organization that's funded by and supported by NATO, they've been teaching people how to make Molotov cocktails, how to use weapons, and they've been attacking police bases, military bases, and also we've had terrorist attacks alongside the Pakistani border, in the no man land in Pakistan, and also in northern Iraq from Iraqi Kurdistan.
Iran says its enemies have waged a hybrid war against the Islamic Republic to weaken national solidarity and hinder the country's progress. Officials say huge amounts of weapons have been shipped into the country by Western and regional intelligence services to carry out terrorist attacks and conduct extensive psychological operations in order to stoke dissatisfaction amongst the Iranian people and make them accuse the Iranian administration for the growing insecurity.
The United States is finalizing plans to send Patriot missile systems to Ukraine. The plan needs the final approval of U.S. Defense Chief Lloyd Austin and the U.S. President Joe Biden. It is not known how many of the batteries will be sent to Ukraine, but reports say supplies to Ukraine will be limited. But according to available data, a typical Patriot battery includes a radar set that detects and tracks targets, computers, and a power-generating equipment. It also includes an engagement control station and up to 8 launchers, each holding 4 radio-fire missiles. The systems are likely to be sent to the U.S. Army base in Grafenwöhr, Germany, where Ukrainian soldiers are likely to be trained and use the equipment. Ukraine has long been requesting the U.S. to send advanced long-range air defense system.
The message is simple. Give Patriots as soon as you can. Because this is the system that Ukraine needs to protect its civilian population and critical infrastructure. This is not an offensive weapon.
Russia has already warned that Patriot missile systems in Ukraine, if are deployed in the conflict, will be targeted. The former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, who is now deputy chair of the National Security Council, had earlier warned that such weapons and their crews would be legitimate targets if a NATO member were to deliver them.
Вашингтон уже сделал себя стороной конфликта в практической плоскости. Принимая во внимание растущие объемы прямой американской военной помощи, включая присутствие военнослужащих США на земле, передача столь сложного вооружения, обращение с которым требует многомесячной подготовки, будет означать расширение вовлеченности кадровых американских военных в боевые действия со всеми вытекающими последствиями. Настоятельно советуем тем, кто в Вашингтоне принимает решение, наконец прислушаться, возможно, не к нам, но к самим себе, сделать правильные выводы из наших неоднократных предупреждений о том, что любые поставляемые на Украину оружейные системы, в том числе Patriot, с соответственно обслуживающим персоналом, были и остаются законными приоритетными целями для вооруженных сил России.
The U.S. and its Western partners have already resupplied Ukraine's air defense missiles and shoulder-fired Stinger missiles and other larger air defense systems. Patriot missile system is one of the most advanced U.S. systems against aircraft and missiles. Ukrainian officials say the delivery of Patriot missiles would be a game-changer. But the efficiency of those weapons for Ukraine in the war against Russia is not clear. Each missile battery would require dozens of well-trained air defenders to operate. Even with an accelerated training program, could be sometime in early 2023 before a system is operational in Ukraine. Experts believe the Patriot has a more powerful radar that is better at discriminating targets, but it has its own limitations. Its efficiency would depend on how the weapon was delivered. The success rate of the Patriot has been repeatedly questioned. In 2018, Saudi Arabia's success in using Patriots against missiles fired in the Yemen war were questioned when evidence of systems failing emerged. The Patriot does not reportedly perform so well against small drones. It is not known whether the system's radar could pick up the small, low-flying drones or whether there were other issues. The U.S. has now committed more than $19.3 billion in weapons and other equipment to Ukraine since the war began in February of this year.
As we work with industry to accelerate production on both replenishment systems and direct procurements under the United Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, or USAI, we're using a number of tools to get the funding moving and the contracting happen quickly. These include using contracting mechanisms called things like undefinitized contracting actions, sometimes called UCAs. What that allows you to do deliberately is to get industry working on an initial contract before we definitize it. And you can put a UCA together within a week, and we're doing that. We also are making use of indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts, or IDIQ. If you have IDIQs, and we have many of them, what you can do is just add task orders to them very quickly to get equipment on contract.
It is widely believed that those U.S.-made weapons are fanning the flames of war in Europe. But there are concerns that those weapons are falling into the wrong hands.
We're seeing this incredible, historic flow of weapons coming into Ukraine. Do we have any sense as to where they're going?
We don't know. There is really no information as to where they're going at all.
You know, all this stuff goes to the border, and then kind of like something happens, it kind of like 30% maybe reaches its final destination.
Washington is reportedly looking into technological solutions to the problem of weapons diversion. Western weapons earmarked for Ukraine had reportedly surfaced in the hands of militant groups in the African Sahel.
The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, says more than 11,000 Yemeni children have been killed or maimed since the Saudi-led aggression against the impoverished country began in 2015. The agency says hundreds of thousands of children also remain at risk of death from starvation or preventable diseases. That's why the true toll of the conflict is likely to be far higher. According to the agency, about 2.2 million Yemeni children are acutely malnourished. One quarter of them aged under five. Most of them are at extreme risk from cholera and other vaccine-preventable diseases. described as the world's worst humanitarian crisis by the UN, nearly three-quarters of Yemen's population is said to be in need of humanitarian aid and protection. UNICEF is seeking over $480 million to respond to the crisis in Yemen over the next year and has warned that lack of predictable funding puts children's lives and well-being further at risk. The agency has also called on the warring sides to renew a UN-brokered truce, which was announced in April and expired in October without an agreement to extend it. At least 62 children have been killed or wounded since then. The collapse of Yemen's ceasefire risks rolling back some of the progress that has been made after the lifting of a Saudi blockade on Yemen that has prevented airplanes and ships from entering and leaving the country. While both sides have blamed the other for failure of a lasting ceasefire, Yemen's Ansarullah movement has stated that restoring peace in Yemen is not possible unless the invading countries abandon their arrogant mentality. Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched a devastating war on Yemen in 2015 with arms and logistics support from the US and other Western states. The objective was to reinstall the Riyadh-friendly regime of Abd Rabbu Mansour Hadi and crush the popular Ansarullah movement, which has been running state affairs in the absence. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have died ever since, either as a result of war or indirectly through unsafe drinking water, disease outbreaks, hunger, and other impacts. In Yemen, thousands of civilian and child deaths have been blamed on Saudi-led airstrikes, which have hit markets, weddings, funerals, residential homes, and hospitals. In addition, Yemen's health ministry said last month that 80 newborn babies lose their lives on a daily basis because the war-torn country does not have the required medical equipment due to the Saudi-led war and blockade. Yemeni officials say the use of prohibited weapons is one of the reasons behind a growing trend of children's death. Several human rights organizations have already acknowledged and condemned Saudis for using such arms. Since launching the war, with the support of Washington, the Saudi-led coalition has used internationally banned weapons, including U.S.-made cluster bombs, to target residential areas. Apart from the war, Riyadh has imposed a blockade on Yemen, which combined have claimed lives of hundreds of thousands of people. The military aggression has destroyed much of the country's infrastructure, including health sector. Meanwhile, Sana'a has warned foreign companies against plundering energy resources of the country, stressing that it will spare no effort to defend national sovereignty and safeguard public interests and health. The Saudi-led coalition and their proxies have looted more than $13 billion in Yemeni oil revenues between 2016 and 2021. The large amount could have been used to pay the salaries of employees in the National Salvation Government, reduce the exchange rate, and help improve the living standards for Yemenis and alleviate their suffering.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
Islam ID.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear brothers and sisters from all around the world, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. I am Vita Shreseris from Youth Station. We are Youth Generation at your service, and we're going to share our point of views with you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is Brother Muhammad coming to you from the same station.
Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam. Nice to have you, Miss Peter, together.
Yeah, for me too. So today we're going to talk about something really controversial. You know, I don't know whether you've experienced this kind of thought gap between your new version and your old version. For example, there are times that you post something on social media about your thoughts, feelings, whatever, and after a long time or even a short time, you came back and you see whatever you wrote there, and you're like, who is this?
It is not me. Oh, yeah.
And this feeling of, you know, large gap between your thoughts and feelings when you posted them on social media and what you are now is somehow bothering. I wanted to ask your own experience on this kind of, actually, topic.
When you talked about this, I remember this saying, this very famous saying that you are the master of your word before you've uttered it.
Yeah.
Once you've said it, you're no longer the master of it. And that is actually very true when it comes to social media. It's even more true than ever. Reason being that we, in this modern era, we're kind of enslaved by this notion that social media, we are much more comfortable in. So we say whatever we like. We try to talk ourselves out in social media. And we post things that we don't dare saying it publicly, but we post it.
Yeah, exactly.
Though it has the same effect and consequences, but we post it and we say stuff in social media in the virtual environment. But then after we get that maturity and we understand that, oh, what have I done? That's like the damage has been done. That feeling is actually very common, not only for like, you know, youngsters, but same goes for any age, let's say. The thing is, when it comes to experience, the more experienced you are with social media, I think this you're less prone to this. But it's a problem that everyone faces.
Exactly.
It's something I have personally faced many times. I've posted, I can tell you, like, at least this, I've posted a few things previously in one of the social medias a long time ago. And there were things, you know, more political.
Yeah.
And what happens is when things on politics, this is how it works, like, it's uncovered, it's a mystery until it's uncovered.
Exactly.
And then when it's uncovered, this is when you realize, oh, what have I done?
Yeah,
I said
exactly.
Something wrong.
You're right? Mistaken.
Yeah, so I think it all comes back to how mature you are with your posting stuff in your social media.
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter how much you are mature, you know, it is always something that you don't know. It is always something that you have to seek for or something like that. And, you know, there is a problem with that, posting your thoughts and, I don't know, beliefs in social media. I have a lot of problem with that, is the superficial knowledge that we're sharing together. You know what?
Yeah.
You know, for example, there is a bunch of people together gathering and they are talking about, I don't know, something, and you know, they are thinking, talking superficially, and that is really bothering. And if you allow me, we'll go for a break and then we're going to come back and talk about this kind of pain in the neck. So dear listeners, stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Youth Station. You are listening to us on IRIB English Radio. So, dear brother, we're talking about the superficial knowledge that we're sharing in social media about our thoughts and beliefs and so on. So, have you ever done such a thing without any kind of research or, I don't know, something you didn't know, but you were kind of feeling something that you are expert in that? only a feeling, and you've posted something.
Personally speaking, I've had less encounters of those because I, being knowledgeable in the IT field, I know that some things are like undoable. You can't undo certain things. And I'm kind of precautious when it comes to social media generally because of the privacy issues and all the other issues that come around it. And in addition to that, I have a lot of friends that would really quickly get back to me on everything I say on social media. So I normally cater for them before I post anything. So I have this layer of precaution. Yeah. But even with this layer of precaution, yes, many a times we do become superficial when we kind of post things. And when I think about it, yes, like I said, politically, many a times, especially youths, us in this age that we're in right now, it's an age in which we normally want to get out there. We want to get our thoughts out there.
Yeah,
let the people know what we feel and believe without us, you know, properly researching necessarily. And that happens. It's very regretful, to be honest.
Exactly. You know, because you are just going extreme in that issue, especially political issue and something, and you think you know everything, you are expert and so on. This is a problem, I think. Mm-hmm. But let's go through the topic of the roots and the reasons of this behavior that we show. Yeah. You know, there are thoughts in that we don't want to talk to anyone, but we post them at the same time. What is this paradoxical content? Why do we do that? You know, there were a study in Harvard University that there were main six reasons for this behavior that we show. First of all, we want to exchange information. This is so easy, you know, because in real world, this is really difficult to, for example, find someone and tell them, okay, this is my beliefs. I want to exchange information with you.
Yeah,
and this is the first reason. And the second one is social support. We need social support. You know, we need somebody to tell us, okay, you're doing well, you're thinking well, you're educating, and something like that.
Just
to
take a point there, that social support does not necessarily come from the social media, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I do agree
with
that.
So it's a much more general point than it being something posted.
But it's easier, you know, gained in social media, I think.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
The third one is friendship. Make friends with other people. You know, I think this goal is somehow paradoxical because when you go through this social media and post your thoughts and beliefs and you are the true self that you want to be, you know, if it's like you are somehow arrogant. You know, it occurs to me that I acted in social media and I was in relation with some people only in virtual world and they felt like, okay, how arrogant you are. They told me.
Yeah.
And when they saw me in the real world, they were like, okay, you are kinder
different.
Than me. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the big difference between the virtual and the actual
exactly.
world.
Exactly. And the fourth one is recreation for entertainment, you know, because it's as a, you know, we look at it as a hobby. And the fifth one is common interest, love, the topic of the, something that we're going through, because our own interest. And the sixth one is the technical reason. But the most important one is make a friend, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
if you do agree with me, we do that to make friends, but I think it came out somehow vice versa.
Yeah, that is true. You see, we look at one dimension of it. One dimension is when you yourself feel regretful and you say, oh, what have I done? I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But then there is another dimension to this entire virtual, you know, information exchange game is when others kind of have a peer pressure on you. So once they realize, oh, look, you believe in that? Really? Oh, you don't believe in that? Really? You don't believe in that? So these kinds of peer pressuring or this, I don't know, getting to know each other is also a very important aspect that we normally have to consider. So that also affects the point you mentioned about essentially making friends. I think what happens eventually is when you kind of get out there and you express yourself, your beliefs, your feelings, and eventually what happens is you would find people around you that are very close to your own beliefs. So I have business friends, I have family, I have other friends, I have political friends, I have friends from my classes and so on. But then I essentially know from the postings that they send, I know how I interact with them.
Yeah,
like for
exactly.
my business friend, I don't care what their political views are, I just do my business exchange with them.
This is a beautiful story. You know, there is a beautiful story about my own experience that I want to tell you. Let's skip it, you know, just for the break, and then we're going to come back.
Sure.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. This is Youth Station. We're talking about something really controversial, about posting your ideas and thoughts on social media. You know, I wanted to tell you a story about my own experience on this. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in reading weblogs and, you know, some personal weblogs about day-to-day life and something like that, yeah. Especially medical student, you know, because it's related to my own major. And once I was reading a kind of weblog from a girl, and she was anonymous without any name or any age or something.
Yeah, like half the people in the, yeah, exactly. In the virtual world these days.
Yeah. And I was reading. It was about, I don't know, 10 years ago. It was written 10 years ago. And I actually got to the end of that weblog, and that girl actually passed away because, I don't know, because of cancer or something.
Oh, my.
And, you know, I felt like, okay, I don't know you. I don't know your name. You're anonymous, completely anonymous to me, but you are still alive in my mind.
Yeah.
Actually, this is the beauty of posting your own thoughts and beliefs on social media.
Oh, yeah, it is. When we look at the negative aspect of it,
yeah.
We should not forget the positive aspect.
Exactly.
Because there are always two sides of the coin. And when we consider the good things that social media has brought to us, we should also be very careful with the negative aspects. And that is with regards to, one very important point within the same topic is how youths are very vulnerable to changing their beliefs just because of a post from an influencer,
yeah.
That they find. And that influencer itself might eventually be regretful of what they posted. But the damage has been done. The youths have, you know, gone through that stage of believing in what that person has said. Now,
exactly.
This is, I think, very important. If we are a person or a group of persons who believe in something and we have a lot of influence in the society, I think it's... I should rather say there should be more layers of precaution before we post something. We should also see the consequences that happens. Because it's not only regretful for ourselves as influencers, I'm talking from the influencer's perspective, but it's very, very... important as we look at the audience, because they're going to be affected by the posts we make.
But, you know, there is a problem which I think it is a kind of rooted problem that, you know, we cannot solve it that much easily. There are some influencers in social media that they post their feelings, thoughts, and everything, and they're like, and, you know, they feel like they're a god. They feel like they're, you know, the boss, and they can tell you what to do, what not to do. And, you know, they act as sure as you think that this is the correct, the most correct thing in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
And you see many people following them. That's the bad thing is you see many people, they, let's just take some, you know, arenas over here. You'll see so-called celebrities, right?
Yeah.
Their entire job is either to play football or to just act in movies. But look at the things that they express in social media. Oh my, how much experience do you have in
exactly,
that? How much knowledge,
like,
do you have in that? And the unfortunate thing is many of them are sometimes affected by other social medias, not research, not education, not experience, but they're just affected by others. They're affected by the vibe, and they simply just surf on the wave that is in the social media itself.
Exactly, and this
which
vibe
really
creates.
Affects the youth these days.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the recent incidents that are happening around the world, not only in Iran but around the world, you'll see it's because of these so-called celebrities in social medias would not necessarily feel regretted after they post, but the effect that they have in the society is actually regretful.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, because most of the majority of the people who are the influence of these influencers are the youth generation, you have to understand that, okay, there is good things, there are, you know, bad things in anything, and you have to find yourself. And
yeah.
When you find yourself and you identify yourself in social media, then you can post your ideas, you can post your feelings, and you can go and share them and talk about them and contribute them. And I don't know, whatever with other people. And this interaction, you know, is kind of more safe when you're sure about yourself.
Us posting, that's good. But then the audience, should we accept any and everything that we see in media? Or should we should we consider a person who is a footballist or a person who is an actor or an actress as the role model for every single aspect of her life?
It's not like that. I do not, the fact that I shouldn't accept something like that from a celebrity. The fact is that it will affect me unconsciously, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a problem. I think that you have
to
control
yourself. Yeah, but if you as the audience of this celebrity, the so-called influencer, you're eventually giving yourself to a person, you're taking thoughts from a person that is not necessarily qualified to give you those thoughts. Don't you think that is true?
Yeah, it is true, actually. You know what? So Just tell me only one sentence about these posting thoughts and, I don't know, feelings on social media.
I'll give you one word. Be careful.
Thank you. That was really nice. So, as dear brother tells us, we have to be careful in this kind of dangerous world. Thank you for listening to us. It was all the time that we have for today's episode. This is IRIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.